November 9th, 2009. It's the Lullabot Podcast. Lullabot Podcast. It's Lullabot Podcast, episode number 80. 80! And this podcast is called the Top 40 Revisited. So one of our most popular podcasts of all time has been our Top 40 podcast, where we did Top 40 Drupal projects. We figure 80... twice 40, we could revisit the list again, especially because that list is getting really old.
And there are modules that, like, nobody even remembers existing.
Yeah. So, anyways, it's the Lullabot Drupal podcast. We get together every couple of weeks and talk about Drupal. I am Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with...
Angie Byron.
And...
Nate Haug.
And...
Jeff Eaton.
As well as...
Kent Five.
Oh, I'm gonna edit that and no one will ever know how long it took us to just say... Simply
we really
say
need
our names.
Just canned intros.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
So, yes. So we've just compiled our new list and we're very excited about it. And to be honest with you, the first time we did the top 40, we had a really hard time narrowing it down to 40. This time we not only had a hard time narrowing it down to 40, we didn't. We just, the top 40 revisited is actually 50 modules. So we'll get to those in a moment. A little bit of news. Do It With Drupal, coming up. Do It With Drupal seminar in New Orleans, December 9th, 10th, and 11th. DoItWithDrupal.com. You can find out more information about that. It's Lullabot's big hoopla in New Orleans. Big, fun event. We've got lots of really great people. We're really excited about this year's event. We've got Dries Boytart, who is going to be keynoting. Dries, for those of you who don't know, is the founder of the Drupal project and the continues to be the lead person in the Drupal project, the visionary behind Drupal. We also have Christina Halverson, who is the author of Content Strategy for the Web, who's going to be talking about content. One of the really great things about Do It With Drupal is how we invite people sort of from outside of the Drupal community to come and talk about a lot of the stuff that people who are building Drupal sites need to know that's not necessarily very Drupal specific. And I don't know, our speaker list is just really great. We've got the schedules up on the site. DoItWithDrupal.com. Stop by and check it out. And come to New Orleans. We would love to see you there and have as much fun with you as we're having with us. I don't know what that means, but... But it's a fun event. We also have a new video out called Site Building with Drupal at store.lullabot.com. This is the mother load, the magnum opus, the Moby Dick of Lullabot Learning Series Drupal videos. It's 4 hours and 45 minutes long, and it's really very dense, lots... good, full of good information about building Drupal sites.
It's so awesome. You'll need to take a break halfway through.
Well, we don't expect you to necessarily watch it all in one sitting, you know, but it's all there. And right now it's we have an early release deal on it. Our videos between the time that we put the download up on the website and the time that the DVD comes back from the pressing plant, we mark down the download. So it's just $55 right now. Go to store.lullabot.com, and all of the Lullabot videos are up there, and there you go. Let's see some other little tidbits from the world of Drupal. Dries Boytart just put up on his blog AT&T, the great American telephone and telegraph company, has started using Drupal for, what are they using it for? Their developer
app store, I think.
I don't know. We don't exactly know what they're using it for, but it's AT&T, so they've been around forever. So that's great. Another one that's been around forever is the White House. The press around whitehouse.gov. We mentioned on the podcast last week that whitehouse.gov launched in Drupal. When was it? About 2 weeks ago? And there's been all sorts of crazy press all over the web. And Jeff, some of it
has indeed been crazy. there's been a lot of interesting coverage. Most of it focused on, you know, the fact that, holy cow, the White House is now using not just Drupal, but just an open source, you know, content management system for a really, really high profile government site. And that's been a big shot in the arm. I mean, even outside of the Drupal world, a lot of open source communities have really felt that it was a validation of the work that's being done. And really, you know, a kick to a lot of the FUD, you know, the fear and uncertainty and doubt that has surrounded the idea of open source in really high profile, visible positions.
High profile, high security as well. I mean, there's, you know, it's not like hacking the White House website is, you know, you're not going to necessarily get to the government secrets, but it would still be highly embarrassing for the White House website to get hacked. That would be very bad.
And there's a lot of, you know, questions circulating about what exactly they've done in order to secure things and, you know, how they're doing that. There's not a lot of talk about that coming from the White House right now, you know, probably understandably. But I think at the very least, it's a big vote of confidence that they built it on an open source platform like Drupal. It's pretty cool. There were a couple of like backlash articles that happened afterwards. Most of them seemed to be a little odd and just sort of, you know, phoned in articles because someone had to take the contrarian position. But there's been a lot of really, really interesting discussion about it, and it's a huge, hugely encouraging move. Like, lots of people in the Drupal community can now say, hey, I wrote code that's, you know, helping power the White House. And that's awesome.
Yeah. We should sort of hurry through this news so we can get to our list. Dries was voted. Is it voted? Where did this list come from? I'm seeing the news item here, but
We're doing a survey amongst other open source enterprise level companies, like companies that either build or work with open source at a really high level, and they asked executives in those companies who they felt were the most influential different, you know, people in open source. And they named some interesting people, you know, stuff like Matt Assay, one of the columnists for CNET, who is really active in talking about CMS stuff, the guy who founded SourceForge, and one of the five was also Dries Boytart. So that was a pretty cool pretty cool vote of confidence for like how Dries and Drupal in general are being perceived in the open source world.
Yeah, breaking through, baby. Wow. Yeah, cool. Drupal 7 news. UX freeze December 1st. Update.
Yeah,
manager.
I was wondering if I could have like a couple minutes just to talk about Drupal 7 stuff.
Okay.
Just a couple minutes.
We've got a long list, Ange.
I know. Okay.
All right, so Drupal
really
7,
fast.
Do it.
Drupal 7. Drupal 7, the UX freeze or the UI freeze or whatever is coming December 1st. So we need to get all the usability improvements, accessibility improvements, all finished up before then. And then we'd also really like to get the performance under control and other sorts of things. So if you look at the podcast node, you'll see lists of all of that kind of stuff. The usability team has a list, kind of a hit list of what needs to be done. The people doing the update manager also need that, need stuff done. They've got a list. There's an accessibility tag, a performance tag, all of that kind of stuff. So if anyone can please, please, please help with that. We've only got less than a month left to go, and we'd really like to bang out all of the last minute stuff in Drupal 7 to make it really, really, really awesome. Thank you.
Ta-da! Awesome. Great. So should we start the list?
Sure.
All right. So we're very proud of our list, although just the disclaimers that right up front. This is our list. It's a very subjective list. What we're finding is that over time, a lot of different Drupal development companies, individuals, have kind of started to develop their own methodology around how to build Drupal sites. And this is our perspective. And there are a lot of other valid perspectives out there. And I'm sure that there will be people who will feel
all others are wrong. Yeah,
well, that's
incorrect.
I'm sure there will be people, and they will come and post comments on the podcast that our list is wrong in one way or another. And they are fully entitled to their opinion and may even have a valid opinion. So we have a list of 50 modules, and we're going to start at number 50 and go backwards. But before we do that, we wanted to mention some of the modules that really would be on this list. Like, so first of all, we're focusing on Drupal 6. Drupal 6 modules. However, there are several modules, Drupal 6 modules, that got into core for Drupal 7. And so we've, in an effort to try and keep ourselves down to 50, we took those off the list and moved them into a separate list. and so
this list totally doesn't count. So.
Yes, but this list doesn't count. It doesn't count to the 50. But I don't know, where should we start? Let's start on that list. So token module. A module that Jeff Eaton originally wrote originally written for Drupal 5, right, Jeff?
It was originally written for Drupal 4.7.
Goodness.
It's been around for a while.
What's it do? Just real quick.
It lets anywhere in the administrative user interface where you want to have little wildcard characters for things like generating path auto aliases or sending out email to users or whatever, and you want to say, put in the user's name here or the organic group that they belong to here or things like that, token allows you to represent those kinds of variables with little textual tokens like bracket, username or something like that. That's what token does. It doesn't actually give any UI.
It was one of those things that lots of different modules were implementing differently, and
yes. It was an attempt to get everyone on board in the same way so that they could all leverage the little bits of data they were exposing and interoperate together. Over time, that ended up proving itself and became pretty widely adopted, and now it's part of Drupal core. So huzzah!
Cool. Another module, so we're going to whip through these, folks. Another module is Vertical Tabs, which is a module it's more like a backport in Drupal 6, but Drupal 7, it's a really cool way that the tabs down the bottom of things like node forms and stuff like that are presented with a little summary to the left there, and you click on it and then it opens up. But for instance, you can see just by looking at the tab if the published checkbox is checked and stuff like that. So that's in Drupal 7. Another module.
It's a nice replacement for all those, you know, horrible collapse field sets that went on and on and on.
So yeah.
It's a really nice new construct.
Yeah, I like it a lot. Really nice UI system.
It was actually originally developed for Drupal 6. A revised version of it became available in Drupal 7.
Oh, okay. Cool. I'm wrong. That's great. Admin role is another module that's sort of one of those, this ought to be in core.
It is.
And now it is. Anybody want to explain what admin role does quick?
Sure. It creates a role. Well, actually, it doesn't create a role. You can assign a role, say you create an admin role. And then once you do that, whatever new permission is there, it'll give it permission to that. So it's basically a way to give all the permissions to the same. It was so handy that they just added it to Drupal 7.
Yes. True. Kent, you're a little robot-y. I don't know. But maybe unplug and plug in. That seems to be the thing that people are doing. Poor man's cron. This module has been around for a long time, and some people sort of scoffed at it, but the honest truth is it just worked. It was a cool thing. Basically, the idea behind poor man's cron, so for people that don't know the cron in Drupal, there's a path, and you're supposed to set up a cron job, a Unix cron job, to run on a regular basis, and basically hit this path using web browser emulator of some kind, curl or wget kind of a thing. And by hitting that URL, it causes Drupal to do its automated tasks. It might need to send out a daily email or, it's cron stuff, Drupal cron stuff. I don't want to get too deep into that. But poor man's cron would just, on a regular basis, when people were hitting the site, when visitors were coming to the site, it would say, oh, it's been an hour since I've run cron, and it would run cron basically in the page exit cycle. Really handy, saved people from having to set up the whole cron job. And I think that probably... In truth, there were a lot of people who would set up Drupal sites and never quite get around to setting up that cron job. So poor man's cron was just nice because it just did it, and now it's part of Drupal core.
Yeah, there were a lot of philosophical arguments against including it, but you don't have to use it. And the thing is that it prevents so many more problems than it causes.
Yeah.
If cron is not run, your site will eventually just implode on itself.
It just becomes bloated and fat, and the database gets ridiculous. And yes, it's
it's
letting your Drupal site go to the restroom. If you can imagine running on a site for 3 months without ever going to the restroom.
image field got into core. Nate, you want to explain what image field is?
Yeah, let's talk about this whole collection of media modules that all got into core. Image field, file field, image API, and image cache all got into core.
Holy smokes.
And all four of those modules basically had the premise of providing what I think should have been a really, really easy thing that Drupal should have had years ago, and that is when you download Drupal, you should be able to upload a picture and have it create a thumbnail for you. And that seems like a really simple requirement, but up until now, we've basically been required to install 5 or 6 modules to get everything that we want. And now in Drupal core, the gist of it is you download it, it already has media handling all built in, and you can create all these complex thumbnails just like you could with image cache in Drupal 6 right out of the box with Drupal 7.
Yep. And then both of those are fields for CCK, which is now in core with fields.
It's just called Field API now.
Yep. And and we mentioned most of these modules in last week's podcast where we covered Drupal 7 stuff. So if you want to delve more deeply into that, check out that podcast if you haven't already. So now here we are. Here it is. Our 50 modules that we've put together.
What's number 1 or number 50?
Well,
that always confuses me.
We're going to start at the bottom and go to the top, to Casey Kasem style. I added this one to there's a module called Read More Link, and it's been called several things over time. It's got a funny module named ed underscore read more. But basically what it does is it creates a read more link right at the end of your node or your teaser. And it takes it out of the node links and puts it right into the node content, which is super handy. This has been a pet peeve of mine for a long time, is that the read more link, when it's in the node links, isn't always the first thing, and it's usually the most important thing, right? It's sort of like, it says, like, this is just the teaser, you haven't actually read the whole node, click here to read more, and it says, like, 18 comments, what else might it say? Flag this as a favorite, and then it says read more as, like, the third or fourth thing in, and it's really frustrating. So this takes it out of the node links, puts it up into the content, and is super handy. It's really nicely configurable, and it's my new favorite module. Although I'll have other favorite modules by the time we get to the end of this podcast. That's number 50. Number 49. Who wants to take number 49?
I'll take it. Node export module. There's just a little nice module to let you do. It gives you a little export tab on any node that you can bring it over to another site, which is handy if you're trying to show a client how something works and you don't have to rebuild, you know, the thing on the other site. So it's similar to how content copy will let you copy a CCK content type. This lets you copy an individual node from one site to another.
Yep. Cool. Node clone number 48.
It's pretty much like node export, but for the same site. The idea is if you open a node and you want to just build an exact duplicate of it and then make a couple of changes and save it as a new node, node clone lets you do that. In addition to view and edit, you get a clone tab on the node. We use that internally at Lullabot because whenever we do workshops, we set up a survey, and it's a web form node. But creating a new, 39-question survey every single time is really annoying, so we just use the node clone button to say, well, you know, start with one of the previous ones, clone it, and make a few changes, and we're ready to go.
Yeah, super handy. If you ever are creating similar things, we use that actually when we run workshops, there's a lot of similarities between them. We have an end of workshop survey that's a web form, and we do that on the intranet site for the workshop. But even the actual workshop, we oftentimes will run the same kind of workshop and we'll just clone one of the old ones and change the information about it and publish a new one. So, yeah. Number 47, node reference URL widget. Nate, that's one of your modules.
Yeah, it's basically an assistant module used in combination with node references. Basically, if you have node references anywhere on your site, especially common in things like if you have a photo gallery node or you have an album node or something like that, and you want to say, I want to add a track to this album or I want to add a picture to this gallery, it just makes a link right within the node links that when you click on it, it will go to the node add form and pre-populate the node reference field for you with that node that you were just looking at, basically. So a really nice shortcut when you want to add a photo to a gallery, you want to add a track to an album or something like that. If you're using node references, it's a really handy shortcut to get you to add that reference quicker.
Yeah, it's one of those things.
It's awesome.
It's just like good.
I think the interesting thing is
it's sort of hard to explain the concept, and it's even the title of it is harder to say the name. But it's just like, yeah, that when you start to come up with examples of what it does, it becomes clearer. Right. Add a photo to this gallery.
Yeah, CCK gives us lots of tools to be able to link things together, but normally you're still restricted to, and then you go to node add, and you choose something that it should link to. This lets you eliminate that stage and just say, I'm in a gallery, I can add a photo here, and it's just really cool.
Cool. Number 46, Memcache.
Oh, how I love Memcache. Basically, Drupal has a built-in caching system that allows modules to say, I just spent a bunch of time building up this piece of information, like getting it from the database or rendering it to HTML. Instead of rebuilding that every single time somebody asks for it, I'm going to stick it in a cache table. Normally, those are actual database tables that are used to, store this kind of information. And on a lot of sites, that's still a net win. You can stick something in the cache tables and retrieve it already built rather than taking the time to, do all the complicated views queries for it or something like that. But on really high traffic sites, you still end up putting a lot of load on the database, just pulling stuff out and putting stuff into those cache tables. The Memcache module lets you use a separate piece of software that stores all of that information just in RAM on a dedicated program running on your server, like next to Drupal, so that all of that cache data that modules are, sticking in and retrieving later just gets stored in super fast RAM rather than putting any load on the database server. That's a huge win. And there's lots of tweaks that can be done, along the way, but that's the basic idea. If you're doing any kind of high-scale, high-availability website that's getting a lot of traffic, at the very least, you want to investigate using Memcache. It was actually originally written by LiveJournal because they needed to scale, and Memcache was written as an internal tool that they built to help them do it. So, it's more than proven itself.
Yeah, and even when you're not looking to just scale your website, if you're looking to make your website a hell of a lot faster, Memcache is just a great addition to any site. It just makes things go so fast. But the only requirement basically is that you have to be on a dedicated server, because you actually need to set up a server process that Drupal will connect to actually store all that stuff in cache. So basically, if you have a dedicated server, you should be using Memcache. It'll make your site go so much faster.
Cool. Number 45, string overrides. Nate?
Yeah, I like
Angie,
this little module.
There you go.
Yeah, this module is really cool because, you know, how you have the whole, like, locale and translation system in Drupal 6. String overrides is a really simple module that just lets you take one string, like, say, for example, the message that says blue smurf or something if nothing is found in the search results, and change it to whatever you want. So if you're just using one language on your site, string overrides lets you do sort of customizations to the user interface text without having to, you know, invoke the whole overhead of the whole translation system just for another version of English, for example.
If I remember correctly, is this the thing that Rob Loach wrote after listening to our, we mentioned that on
yes.
a podcast?
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
totally said, someone should write that, and then he did.
Yeah, it was one of those. We were sort of musing on a podcast and saying, you know, you could probably write a module that would just do this and store it in the variables table, and bang, there it was. So, yes, it's yep. if you just want to override some of the text on a site, you know, change the word forums to message boards is a good example. String overrides is really good that way. Number 44, Google Analytics. This is such a simple module that, like, I think it almost didn't make it on this list, but it evens us out as having 50 modules on the list. So there we go.
I would like to add a reason why you should use Google Analytics module instead of using just the straight up JavaScript snippet that Google gives you. Google Analytics has an option that's off by default, and if you're using Google Analytics module, you should turn it on. And that is, it has an option to cache locally the Google Analytics JS file. And that sounds like a silly thing because it still makes a separate request, but the thing is that it doesn't have to connect to a different domain. Just opening up the connection to Google Analytics, the Google servers, actually causes an extra delay as opposed to if you were retrieving the JavaScript file from the same server.
Because it does DNS lookup and all that kind of stuff. Yep.
Exactly. And so using the module is helpful because you can check that box, and it will periodically check the Google servers for a new copy of that JavaScript file and then store it locally.
Yeah, it's a nice module if you're using Google Analytics. We use it. Simple, easy, great. It's a great module, just works. It's one of those just works kinds of things. You have to make sure that your theme has the, what's the variable at the end?
Closure.
Closure, yeah, the closure variable. You can watch our theming video to find out about the closure variable if you want.
I still think the three best concepts in all of Drupal are, for views, relationships and arguments, and then, of course, closure.
Nice.
Thank you, Jeff. Nice, Jeff. That was a particularly geeky humor. I like it.
Thanks.
Number 43, the great web form module, Nate Haug.
So web form module is basically Drupal's solution for surveys. If you were to cut it real cleanly, that's exactly what it does. It's a many person to few person mechanism for collecting data. So you want to do a survey, you want to ask a whole bunch of people about something, and then you're going to have a set of administrators that are going to look at those results. Webform provides a really easy system for creating a form, collecting information, and then getting that data back out. It provides all kinds of export options and reporting options that make it easy to get that information back out and, say, put it into an Excel spreadsheet or something like that.
You can also have the form data just mailed to someone or some list of people.
Yeah, of course. All kinds of reporting things, too. So when a person fills out the survey, you could use it as an advanced contact form is actually what I use it for on my site, where you have things like work inquiries or something like that.
Yep.
And like we mentioned before with the numbers 48 and 49, because web forms are nodes, you can easily clone them using node clone or export them and move them across sites by using node clone and node export modules.
Yep. What Nate is also not mentioning is he is the guy who wrote, well, who maintains currently WebForm module and has basically rewritten it to be what it is today. Which is awesome.
Useful. I'll say that.
It is very useful. There's some things that you might want to use CCK for instead, but certainly exactly in the way that Nate described it, WebForm is good for that stuff. Number 42, better formats.
It's better.
What's it do?
Jeff Eaton, you want to take this one?
Yeah, sure. Basically, the Drupal input formats, you can set up stuff like, filtered HTML, full HTML, stuff like that. They're usually pretty, they're not very granular. You have to set up input formats, and you can say what roles have access to certain input formats, but there's no real control over that. Better formats allows you to do things like, say, certain content types should only ever allow certain kinds of formats, or alternately, certain user roles should always default to a different format. This is just consistent frustration sometimes on my blog, because I, as the author of the blog, I want to use full HTML at all times. I want to post stuff. I want to stick in an image or whatever. I don't want to have to worry about that. But if I choose full HTML as the default, then suddenly that means that everybody who has an account at the same level as I do is going to see that as the default. It's very odd. There's no good way to control those kinds of things using the default filter setup. Better Formats does all of that. It lets you set up and tweak things so that things like input formats just are much closer to just working once you've got them set up and people are using the site.
Cool. Number 41, Views Bulk Operations.
Oh, God. I love Views Bulk Operations. It's so amazing. Basically, anytime you have a view, you set up, a giant table of posts that are, new since last Tuesday and are in a particular publishing state or whatever, all those things, Views Bulk Operations allows you to say, instead of just showing it as a table, I want to show it as a bulk operation screen, which is just like a table, but with the addition of a drop-down list that shows any kinds of action you can perform on the items in that list and a do this button to them. So basically, you can sort of roll your own content administration or user administration forms by building a view that shows just what you need shown. Then say, I want a Views Bulk Operations screen from this, and I want these 10 specific actions to be things that people can do on this administrative panel. And bam, you've got an administrative screen. It's really, really nice.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Number 40. Now we're down to 40. Hooray. Node queue. I'll take this one. This is a module written by Earl Miles. And it definitely falls under one of those modules written by Earl Miles that when he first explained it to me, I went, and I pretended to understand, but didn't really understand, but now I understand it. It's one of those things it's just, we end up using a lot. Node queue allows you to take nodes, things on your site, and put them into an ordered listing, a queue. You can set it up in all sorts of different ways where things can automatically push in. You can have things push in and push out, so there'd be 10 things, and when you push in a new thing, it pushes the last thing on the list automatically off and stuff like that. But we just use them for Do It With Drupal, doitwithdrupal.com. The speakers on the homepage is a node queue, and it's just showing up as a block on the homepage of the pictures of the people, and we have them that block using a jQuery or jCarousel but basically how you put someone onto the homepage is you take their profile and put it into the node queue. We're also using node queue for we just switched over to using node queue for workshops on lullabot.com/training so that we can just control what's on there rather than having it all automated. It's a very manual process to put something into a node queue, but it really gives you a lot of control over it. I still wish that node queue items were drag and droppable using the Drupal current drag and dropping stuff, it's still kind of got the old views click up to move things up and down the list. But it's a good module nonetheless. Super handy, integrates with views. Number 39, content access.
Yeah, I like content access. Content access is just a pretty straightforward node access module that lets you either restrict individual nodes by role, so you can say like only administrators can see this node, or you can even, with the addition of the ACL module, restrict it to individual users. So you can say this particular, say, course node in a web course is only accessible to these 13 people. If you don't want to make, if you want to, for example, time their access or something like that. And yeah, it's just kind of a straightforward module that pretty much does everything you need for basic content access. If you need something a little even more basic than that, there's also the private module, which is written by Jeff Eaton, which simply adds a checkbox to any node that just says make this post private. Jeff, did you want to talk a little bit about that?
I wrote private module for my mom's blog. That was the guiding principle behind the user interface for it.
You didn't want everything your mom writes to be out publicly on the internet.
well, there's that. But no, I mean, the idea was, you know, we tend to focus when we talk about Drupal content access mechanisms on like really exotic, wacky, like edge cases. We're like, okay, so there's these 9 departments, and then there's the one guy you hate, and everybody needs different rules, and, you know, stuff like that. It's also possible to say, I would like a checkbox that lets me mark things as private. That's all. And that's what this module does.
Cool.
And we talk about private module in the site building video.
Yeah. So that's technically 2 modules is number 39, but we're just going to gloss over that and move along to number 38. 38 is the comment notify module. Is it WordPress that has this built in? Or maybe there's like a module for WordPress or something like that that does this. I know that there's some blogging software out there that does this kind of a thing. And it's one definitely under one of those things that like just Drupal ought to do this. And what
but it
is.
It does with the comment.
Well, with the module, exactly. So install the module and then Drupal will do what it ought to do, which is it adds a checkbox in your comment form saying, notify me, the person who's commenting right now, when other people comment on this thing. So you post the comment, you check the box, and you say, I think this is the greatest thing ever. And then when the next person posts saying, I think you're an idiot, you'll be able to come back for a good flame war right there and it can happen really quickly because you get an email each time just telling you that what an idiot you are. And
I once came back to a 200 comment long thread in my blog
without knowing.
Yeah, and it was just 2 people who'd gotten really angry at each other. No joke.
Good times. Comment notify. Yes, notify people when there are notify the people who are commenting of other comments. And you can configure it a bunch of different ways. That's just real nice and easy. Number 37, Facebook Connect.
This lets you like log in with your Facebook account. Is that correct?
Yeah, I just kind of tested out this module the other day for the first time. It's really extensive and super and easy to get installed. It allows people to log into Drupal site, create an account, yes, using their Facebook account. It'll automatically bring in their Facebook profile picture. It can also, whenever you comment on the site, you can have it post back to Facebook and stuff like that. Actually, the first time I saw it being used, I mean, I've seen the module around, but the first time I saw it being used was on Deuce.com, DOOCE.com, just launched their community.deuce.com website, which was built by Ben Brown and John Armstrong, who are both speaking at Do It With Drupal. And they were showing me the site, and I said, oh, well, I can log in with Facebook. And I did it, and it was easy. And it's got all these great features. And it's all just right built in, super easy, good stuff. Number 36. I hope I'm not going to do all of these right in a row. Number 36 is Login Toboggan, a module that I originally co-wrote with Chad Phillips, and I had the honor of naming it.
It's the sleddingest module there is.
It is. It just just slides you right into the login system. It's a whole bunch of configurations and reorganizations of basically Drupal's login system. So it allows you to – it has settings for things like allow users to log in with their username or their email address. Because email addresses are unique, why not let people log in with that? Does things like when people are registering, there's a setting to for them to have to write their email address twice to confirm that it's correct, because if people write in the wrong email address while they're registering and Drupal sends their registration to the wrong email address and they never receive it, they will never be able to log into your site with that. And that username is now taken. It's just a horrible situation. So it's a lot of sort of improvements to and around the Drupal login system, login toboggan. It rhymes.
Oh.
Number 35 is the CAPTCHA module. Anybody want to hit this one?
It, basically, if you've ever tried to fill out a comment on the web and been asked, can you please like translate this arcane graphic into human words? That's a CAPTCHA. It's basically a way of verifying that, you know, somebody is either not like a spam bot or is just easily frustrated and prone to walking away. And the idea is, like, there are a lot of anti-spam tools like Akismet and Malum for Drupal that can add this specifically to node and comment forms. But the CAPTCHA module is a general solution that allows you to add a CAPTCHA to lots of different input forms in Drupal. So if you've got a custom module that, say, gathers data from people who are visiting your site in some sort of customized way, CAPTCHA can still be used there using the CAPTCHA module and its API. So it's a nice one to have around. You definitely want to give it a shot if one of the solutions like Akismet or Malum isn't covering everything you need it to.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, there's also kind of a sister module to that called ReCAPTCHA. And ReCAPTCHA is neat because you're basically transcoding literature of some kind. I don't really know the whole story there.
Yeah, ReCAPTCHA is a service, and it's doing optical character recognition, OCR, on various books and converting them into digital format. And it basically, when it finds a word that it's having trouble with, it kind of uses a crowdsourcing to just sort of send it out to various websites and uses it as a CAPTCHA on these sites. And so by people typing in, that says this, then you're actually helping to translate those.
Which is crafty, because that means that half of a reCAPTCHA isn't actually being checked. Half of a reCAPTCHA is actually everyone's answers being checked against each other.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Incidentally, CAPTCHA, CAPTCHA, is an acronym of sorts, which stands for Completely Automated Public Turing Test to Tell Computers and Humans Apart. Now you get extra credit for that one. CAPTCHA, number 34, Workflow.
Oh, workflow. What can I say about workflow? Basically, Drupal core comes with two different states that nodes can be in. Either it's published or it's unpublished. That's okay for certain scenarios, but in a lot of situations, you actually need a richer set of states that things can be in. For example, if you need, say, people who write articles to be able to keep things in a draft state, and then when they're finished, it needs to go to an editor who needs to review it and approve it, and then after the editor has signed off on it, it can be published. Maintaining things in those multiple different states can be a real pain with core. Workflow lets you set up those states, assign them to different content types, and then have different actions, like now it should be published to the front page, or now an email should be sent off to the editor. And those actions can be triggered when things change from state to state. It's got a relatively complex and confusing user interface because you're modifying big grids and matrices of permissions for who can move things from one state to another.
Relatively confusing?
I love showing that to people because it just scares the hell out of them. And then they never complain about any other interface in all of Drupal ever again.
It's pretty sweet. But the underlying functionality of controlling who can move things from one state to another and what happens when they do, it's really, really useful. So big thumbs up for the workflow module.
Number 33, scheduler module. Heck, I'll do it. I like it. Right. So you've got, I don't know, there's some RSS feeds that I subscribe to. And what happens is the guy who's writing the, this blog or something I subscribe to a bunch of like music technology blogs, and there'll be like press releases that come out, and the guy, you can tell, sits down on the weekend and he enters in a whole bunch of articles and he publishes them all at once, and they all show up in this big blump in my RSS feed, all like six articles right there, and then there's nothing for like 2 weeks, and then another eight articles show up and stuff like that. What would be smarter would be to use a module like, well, of course, to be using Drupal would be smarter, but if you were using Drupal, to use the scheduler module and spread them out, post one a day, and schedule things to happen in the future. You can post date articles in core Drupal, but they don't actually post on that date. They just show up, they just have a date in the future. With this, you can schedule them to post in the future. And it also has an option to reset their date, so that they show up as published on at the same time that they're scheduled to publish. It's, again, one of those things, like, I think Drupal ought to do this in core and it doesn't. So there's a module and it works fine and it's great. I like it. Scheduler module. Number 32, Table Wizard and Migrate. Table, is it?
Oh, me.
Are these two things?
Me.
These are two modules. Okay.
They are two modules. But
yeah, Angie Byron, I call on you.
Yay! So yeah, these are two modules. One is called Table Wizard, which basically allows you to take any table from either your internal or external database and pull it in and make it a view. Which is super, super handy, if you ever wanted to, like, let's say you had a big database of overdue library fees or something like that. You didn't want to pull all of that into Drupal as nodes and all that kind of stuff, but you wanted to display it on the page that talks about the book, which you do want in Drupal. You could use the Table Wizard module to just retrieve that external data and show it right there. But the second thing that you can do with this, which is awesome, is the Migrate module will accept incoming data as a view, and you can do content imports with it. So you could, for example, take your external data, Joomla or WordPress or PHPBB or even an older Drupal site, and then expose its tables as views with Table Wizard, and then use Migrate module to map the incoming data from a view to, say, nodes and taxonomy terms and roles and all this kind of stuff. So it's awesome, awesome, awesome stuff. The reason I'm so excited about it is because I've spent basically the last two or three weeks just with my face in this module, and I wrote an article about it on the Lullabot site that you could look at if you want. But anyway, it's awesome.
Yes, if you want a longer description, there's an entire article about it on lullabot.com.
It has pictures,
yes. Number 31, data module. What the heck?
Data module.
What the heck is data module?
Well, okay. So
module.
Positronic brain. No, okay. Really. Data module is actually a tool that was built by Development Seed, and they've used it on a couple of their projects. Basically, there are lots of situations when building different kinds of sites where you say, I don't need a new node type. I don't need some huge custom like set of content types and fields. I just need a database table. Just like one table full of one row records that contain information I need to store. Data module is about that. It gives you a UI for creating those tables and for setting up the rows, and then it gives you a UI for entering data into them. So it's just a real simple CRUD interface for doing like data tables like that. It also has an API so that modules can say, here, just give me the table and handle all the integration stuff for me, like setting up the editing interface. It also works with Table Wizard module to auto-generate views integration. So anything you set up with data module, you get like you can get the ability to build views of it and stuff like that. It's a really nice solution for just those chunks of information you need to enter in when you don't need the overhead of the node system and you just need data sitting there. It's handy. It's nice. You may not need it on every site, but it's a nice sort of tool to have in your toolbox when it's necessary.
Number 30, Global Redirect. I like this module.
Go for it.
Okay, so Global Redirect oftentimes gets written about in SEO related search engine optimization related articles about Drupal. What does it do? It redirects to sort of the whatever the canonical URL is for a thing. So if you go to node/123 and there is a path alias set up for node 123, global redirect module will say, hey, there's a path alias for this. Don't go to node 123. Go to /about, and it will redirect you there. Likewise, if you go to node/1, what would be a better example? If you go to your site/about/, it would redirect you to about. So basically, it does a whole bunch of like redirecting, so that it makes sure that whenever anyone bookmarks your website, they are bookmarking the single place that is the URL for the site. Another really good example is the Drupal front page setting. Let's say that you set to the front page to well, even if it's on the default of /node, sometimes if you use a module that does Drupal get destination, I'm getting too deep into the APIs here, but if you do something like that logs you in and then redirects you back to the page that you are on, Drupal, when you're on the homepage, Drupal internally thinks this is the page called /node, and oftentimes it will redirect you back to /node instead of just the, you know, URL, top level URL of your site, and global redirect takes care of that to make sure that you don't end up with just a bunch of cruft in the URL. So, and it's good for SEO as well, because it basically tells Google, hey, they mean this when they have bookmarked that. So there you go. Number 29, Swift Tools.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about this one. Swift Tools is basically, I like to think of it as the universal solution for I need to put audio and video on the site. It's not actually so much about putting it up. You can use file field for actually uploading stuff, but when it comes to actually displaying it, you know, I want to show like an audio player that lets people scan forward and backwards, or I want to show a video player that is consistent in its interface or something like that. Swift Tools is basically a whole collection of output arrangements that make it so that you can easily use Flash-based output for an audio, like a podcast site, like we use it on lullabot.com, or for video casts. If you need to be outputting audio and video from your site, this is a good solution.
Does Swift Tools provide a CCK output formatter?
Yes, it does. So you can just set up a file field. You upload a MP3 into that file field, and then just select the Swift Tools formatter, and then it shows up as a nice little play instead of downloading the audio file or downloading the video file. It'll automatically convert that audio file to an audio player, or that video file to a video player.
Yeah. Boy, comparing this, if you go back to the last top 40, it's just, it was over 2 years ago, and there's just a lot of stuff on there now that I just would not recommend. Audio module, video module have really just kind of been deprecated, and this is one of the things that has replaced those kinds of things, so... Yeah, there's some like dependency kind of things that make this work a little better. Is this the Get ID3 works with this? Is that right, Nate?
I don't know.
I don't know either. I know there was the Get ID3, which reads in information out of the files to tell like how long the MP3 is, or you know how the file size and stuff like that. I'm not sure if this works with that. But something does, and it's good when it does. Number 28 is Vue's slideshow. Nate?
Yeah. I like this module because there's about a billion solutions for making slideshows, rotators, faders, whatever you want to call it. There are just tons and tons of solutions for doing that sort of thing. Like I want to show one big picture and a series of thumbnails, and I want the big picture to rotate through the thumbnails, or maybe I just want to have the big picture that rotates without the thumbnails. No matter how you cut it, Vue's slideshow basically handles every situation you can think of. It has all of the flexibility of Vue's, so it can rotate through any kind of content. It's not necessarily just pictures. It can rotate anything. And it has every option that you could possibly want. I want with the thumbnails, without the thumbnails. I want the thumbnails to be a certain size. If you need to make a rotator of any sort, Vue's slideshow is the solution for that.
I think we're using this on doitwithdrupal.com as well, right? For the sort of the quotes. If you go to the homepage there, there's a little box with quotes on it. And you get it sort of a new one every 15 seconds or something like that. You get it, and it rotates through them, and it's a little slideshow of quotes, not pictures. You think pictures when you think slideshow, but that's just text. Handy and dandy. Number 27, automatic node titles.
Oh, let me tell you how much I love this module.
How much do you love this module? Jeff Eaton, how much do you love this module?
I love it like kissing kittens. okay. You got a problem.
Kittens kissing each other? Or you kissing kittens? All right, keep going.
Okay. So, yes. Automatic node titles. Say you've got a content type, like, say, you've got the name of an event and you've got the date of an event. You want those things to be entered in separately because one's a text field and one's just, you know, like an actual date field that has meaning so that you can put it on a calendar, stuff like that. You maybe want to sort last name and first name separately in a view, so you need to have those as separate fields. But then you have this problem of the node title. Do you expect people to fill out these individual fields and then manually enter in a node title in the correct format, like so that everything sorts properly when you just see the titles? No. You can't be expected to do that. Users can't be trusted to do anything. And, you know, if you want to change the format of those titles or whatever, you're kind of hosed. It's tricky. Automatic node titles lets you completely hide the title field entirely and set up patterns and rules for how the title should be populated based on other CCK fields. So you can say, like, I want the date field for when this event will happen in a particular format, and a space, and a dash, and a space, and then the place that the event is occurring. That's what I want the title to be always, period. And if somebody goes in and changes the date, the title will be automatically updated, but they don't have any direct control over it. It's just really simple, really useful. I'm a big fan of it. Anytime you want people to enter in structured data and you want consistent titling across them, I always recommend using automatic node titles.
Here again, and I'm getting silly with this, I apologize, folks. Doitwithdrupal.com/speakers, our speaker list. Each of the speakers, we use Content Profile, a module we'll mention a little bit later. And it has, there's a separate field for first name and a separate field for last name. And then it creates the title using first name space last name. But when you go to this page, it sorts by last name. So what you see is an alphabetical by last name listing, even though each of the titles is first name, last name. So it sort of solves that problem of being able to sort by last name, even though you want to see the title be first name, last name, and not last name, comma, first name. So yes, automatic node titles. It's simple and easy and good. Number 26, insert.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about this one just because it's a brand new module that I recently put together. It's the replacement for file field insert, which despite never having an official release, became extremely popular, like well over 1,000 installations in a couple months that it was out, and no official release. And considering the popularity of it, I was like, we should make this an actual, like a real module with official releases and all this stuff. I renamed it to Insert Module because file field is now merged into core in Drupal 7. It doesn't make sense to put file field in module names anymore if that's going to be deprecated in Drupal 7. So insert, basically another huge convenience module. If you use file field for uploading your files onto your site, once you've actually uploaded that file, now you want to put it into a WYSIWYG. Now you want to put it into the body area. Getting that, say like you upload a picture and then you want to put that picture inside the body. Previously it was kind of a pain. You either had to use the image button on your WYSIWYG editor or you'd manually type out an image tag or do something silly like that. Absolutely murder for your end users. And so what it does, really simple, you upload a file and it puts an insert button right next to it. And so you upload the file, you click insert, and it inserts it into the WYSIWYG or text area that was last active.
At your cursor point, right?
Yeah, wherever your cursor was, yeah. And in addition, it's so easy to do things like insert images, not just at their original size, but it also has full support for image cache. So you can say, I want to insert a thumbnail into the text area, or I want to insert a 600 pixel wide image into the text area. Just a huge convenience. Reuses all existing technology, so you'll be reusing file field, reusing image cache, reusing all these things you already have on your site, and then just making it easy for users to get that information from the upload into the text area.
Cool. Yeah, it's really slick. Got another nice module from Nathan Haug. Ding. you need an audio logo, Nate.
I need a sound bit bite for my smile, actually.
Quick sketch.
Ding, ding, ding. I'm smiling right now.
You jingle, ladies. Wow.
Number 25, views attach.
Yeah, views attach. So, okay. This one gets a lot of questions because, you know, its name is a little ambiguous. Basically, say you have a node, and there's things related to that node, like stuff that is connected to it via a node reference. Or you have a user, and you know you want to show pieces of content that they've created, like on their actual profile, not you know in a sidebar block sitting in the sidebar or something like that. Views attach lets you create a view and then actually stick it into the user profile page in the same way that profile module puts their profile fields or something like that. It also lets you put a view into the actual content of a node the same way a CCK field appears in that node's content or something like that. So for example, say you made a photo gallery content type and then you made photo content types. You could then make a view of all of the photos associated with a particular gallery. But using views attach, you could actually say instead of that view of all the photos in a gallery living on its own separate page generated by views, I actually want it to be on the photo gallery node itself. So when you go to look at the gallery node, you would see, you know, its title, description, stuff like that, and then the view of all of the items that are inside of it. Views attach lets you set up those kinds of things where a view doesn't live on its own designated page somewhere, but is actually embedded into a user profile or a node. It's really, really handy, and it goes well with a couple of the other node reference related modules that we've mentioned already.
Number 24 is services.
Yeah, services module. Services module is basically the ultimate solution for connecting something that is not a website to Drupal. The best example of this probably being Flash. If you want to have a Flash front end and a completely Drupal administrative area or back end, services is absolutely necessary. And what it allows you to do is basically make Drupal API calls from within things that are not Drupal at all, like Flash being the best example. You can make it so that you can do things like you can do a node load directly from within ActionScript or from within like a Flex application or something like that. So it gives you full access to exposed Drupal APIs, things like node load, as well as like your menus that you have available, or if you want to vote on things. All of this stuff is all exposed through services, making it available to any kind of interface that doesn't necessarily have to be Drupal driven at all. So a really handy connection mechanism that can use XML RPC, which comes with it, which is remote procedural calls, or AMP PHP, which is like the Flash connection protocol specifically. It has a very nice optimized connection to connect between Flash front ends and Drupal back ends.
Yeah, very flexible. A lot of people use that for a lot of different things. Number 23 is Feed API.
Oh, Can I do this one? I just keep jumping in. I love
Well, the higher we get up, the more we love these modules. So, yeah, go ahead. It's getting silly. It's getting silly. Every module's like, oh, I love that module. Well, yeah, that's why they're on the list.
Feed API is a replacement for Drupal's built-in aggregator module. A couple of big differences. First, it always makes nodes out of incoming feed items. That's, you know, maybe pro, maybe con, but it just makes that assumption and says you're going to be generating nodes out of stuff. You create a feed by creating a node and giving the URL for it. It pulls it in, creates nodes, and associates them with the feed node. It's really nice. You can build views of your feeds, the whole deal. It also supports plugins so that, like, odd formats, like, you know, comma-separated value files that contain data on, like, some government website or whatever, you can pull those in and treat them as if they were an RSS feed, and there's, like, a little mapping layer that can handle that translation. It's really slick. I'm very fond of it, and a lot of different clients that we have are using it when they need to pull in external data sources like that. Now, the creators have just actually released a new module just called Feeds that is an attempt to sort of make a next-generation version of this module that handles things somewhat differently, but it's sort of in the research project phase, and for the majority, I think, we're at a place where Feed API is like the mature, generally supported solution that most people who need like hardcore feed aggregation that aren't being served by Drupal's built-in aggregator, they go with Feed API.
Sweet. Number 22, we actually have three modules here. I call this line Jeff Eaton's Lost Weekend. it's the trio of custom links, custom pagers, and custom breadcrumbs. And boy, you should have seen Jeff after this weekend of writing these modules. Jeff, you want to talk about what they are?
Well, the funny thing is it was one of the first major sites that we were going to be building using CCK and views instead of hand-rolled custom modules. And that was awesome, and it gave us tons of big wins. But at the same time, we noticed three things that we were going to lose out on. A, we couldn't have those little links in the bottom of the node. Like when you have blog module turned on, it says, you know, go see other blog posts by Bob, and you could click on that. You know, so we couldn't have that just using views in CCK. We also couldn't do custom breadcrumb trails. Like when you go to, you know, a blog node using Drupal's built-in blog module, it shows home and then Bob's blog and then posts by Bob. So you can sort of navigate back up the breadcrumb trail that way. Just using CCK, you don't get that. And in addition, like things like little previous and next pagers, the way forum module does when you want to navigate through the forums, there was no way to do that. So basically, there were these three things, like breadcrumbs, custom links in the bottom of a node, and pagers that CCK out of the box didn't provide us. So that's what these three modules were.
And also, you'd just written this token module.
Right. And the funny thing was all three of these modules needed some way to specify what the text of the breadcrumb or the text of the link or the text in the little pager link ought to be. And you wanted to use like consistent bits. So you could say, I want it to be the node title and the path should be the node's URL or something like that. So all three of these modules needed to share that those bits of information about the nodes that were being displayed. So that was actually the first use case for using the token module. All four of those sort of have a shared history with each other. And at least for us and the way we built sites, they were all very, very closely related to how we were able to quickly mock up websites using CCK and views and not have to dive in and write a bunch of custom code when we needed those little decorative bits.
Yep. Number 21, a module I really think is really cool, file field sources.
Yeah, who put together this list? Why are all these modules on here?
It's all our modules. So, like I said, it was a very subjective list, and now we're realizing maybe it's just we know these modules because we wrote them. You wrote this one, Nate. File field sources.
Let's not have any pretenses here. So, file field sources. File field sources is an extremely useful module for when you have a lot of images that you're going to be reusing throughout your site. So you upload an image in one place, and you're like, gee, I wish I had that image that I just uploaded on that other node. Or let's say you're pulling in files or images from some other server, and you just know the URL, like you're pulling in Flickr pictures and you're hosting them locally on your own site. FileField Sources is a utility that lets you use not only files directly uploaded from your machine, but anytime you're setting up a file field or an image field, you can say, instead of upload from your disk, you have a set of options where you can say upload, or you could say use existing, which might give you like an autocomplete box, or you could say use a remote one where you can just paste in a URL, or if you have the IMCE module installed, which is a file browser, you can say, you know, open up a file browser. And it's completely pluggable to make it so you can pull files from any kind of location. The important thing to note is that it's always transferring those files locally. So sometimes that's a really good thing. Things like you want to host that Flickr picture from your site instead of from Flickr, in case Flickr goes down. Then it actually transfers it over. And it also is really good just in making it so you can reuse the same images over and over again between different pieces of content.
Which means, and by bringing them local, you can also use it with image cache, so you can resize them and crop them and all that kind of stuff, which is really cool.
Yeah, that's right. So you can do things like, you can combine, like, I want to pull in an external Flickr image and then hit transfer. It'll do a transfer with a nice little progress bar telling you it's pulling it over. And then with now insert module, then you can just say, yeah, insert that as a thumbnail. So you can choose your own thumbnail sizes instead of using the predefined, like, 4 that Flickr gives you.
That module's so cool. It's really cool. It's really cool to be able to, especially when you put in a URL of a image somewhere else and sort of watch it kind of suck into the site and get resized and stuff like that. It's really very cool. Very cool module. Number 20, embedded media field. How's this different from Swift Tools?
Yeah, well, with FileField Sources and Swift Tools, two of the previously mentioned modules, those modules are all about working with locally hosted content. You know, if you upload your audio file or your video file locally, or if you're hosting Flickr images, you're transferring them over to your own site, then you'll use those previous solutions. But embedded media field is all about external content. Like, let's say you have video, YouTube, or Blip TV, or any kind of hosted service for videos, images, audio. It can handle just about every service there is. And it has an extremely flexible API that makes it so you can authenticate if you have proprietary content or something like that on these services, or you could just use publicly available content, things like YouTube. An embedded media field makes it so that you can take pretty much any of those URLs or IDs or whatever, paste them into a simple text field, and then they'll show up as the appropriate player when you're actually viewing the content. It's also nice because it makes it so you don't have to, say, grant full HTML privileges to your users, because things like an embed tag or an object tag could be potentially dangerous if you allow them to be inserted directly into a text area, because they could reference all kinds of nasty things that aren't YouTube videos or Blip TV videos or anything like that. So basically, if you're doing a site where you're doing video hosted on an external service, embedded media field can almost certainly handle any service.
Cool. Where are we in this list?
Number 19.
Number 19. Backup and migrate. Backup and migrate. Oh, it's so nice.
I think this is the top-rated module on DrupalModules.com.
Yeah.
Actually.
So the podcast before the last podcast was, what do we call it, Drupal Screw-Ups? And our biggest, most mortal screw-up of all is not to back up your website. And this module basically backs up your database. And it can do it in a number of different ways. The thing that I enjoy about it the most is being able to, and this is sort of the kind of migrate part of the backup and migrate, is to be able to go and take just a database dump of your website. And so you could take a database dump, and if you had a local copy of your website, you could install that database locally, and then you could sort of work locally, having most of the data from your live site local. But it can also be set up to on cron runs, back up your data into a directory, preferably a non-web accessible directory on your website, and make sure that you've got backups of your database. It's just good and easy and nice, and it's so popular that it's got to be secure, right? It is secure if it's used correctly. Backup and migrate module. Number 18, content profile. Who wants to take this one?
I can take this one. Content profile is basically a means of basically adding CCK fields to user profiles. So what it does is it works and creates a sort of a node representation of every user on your site, which then you can apply CCK fields to. It's sort of getting around the limitation of profile module, where profile module has its own field system, which doesn't work with CCK, and it's all just sort of confusing and stuff. So content profile is the way to work around that. So it's really interesting if you want to reutilize, like, say, image fields or file fields or field groups or anything that you can do in CCK. It allows you to do with user profiles as well.
There were several different modules in Drupal 5 that did this sort of users as nodes kind of a thing. Bio module was one that I wrote, and there were a couple others that were sort of competing, I guess. And content profile is the amalgamation of all of them. And basically, if you were using bio in the past, Drupal 5, use content profile for Drupal 6. Number 17, diff module.
I like diff module.
I like diff module too.
Yeah. Diff module is cool. It's you know, Drupal core offers node revisions, which is the ability to, you know, tell the difference between one and the other. It stores each individual.
Well, it stores them, but you can't really tell the difference.
You can if you're really good at eyeballing things and telling the difference. So diff module makes it so there's a little button that will tell you what differences are, so you don't have to have two windows up and squint a lot, which is headache-inducing and other sorts of badness. It also has a neat feature where you can preview the changes that you've made to a post. So in addition to showing you the changes that were made between two different revisions, you can also see right before you post, you know, your edit, you can see what did I actually change in here and make sure that that nothing is in there that you don't want.
Yeah, I think it uses the same diff engine that Wikipedia uses or something like that. There's like a diff library out there somewhere that sort of it's using, or maybe it's got its own thing going now. But yeah, sort of Wikipedia style, you can kind of see how has this changed? This person changed it, but what did they do? And you can see it highlighted right there. It's nice, easy, good, easy and good. Always good things. Number 16. Again, here in the last top 40, we had a Kismet on the list. We don't have a Kismet on the list this time. This time we have Malum.
It is Dries Boitart's very own anti-spam technology. It's actually pretty cool. One of the advantages of it is the Drupal module that integrates with it sort of gets it gets pretty high priority treatment. Basically, it can check comment forms and node submission forms and the user registration form and I believe the contact form. Correct me if I'm wrong. It can check those different pieces for basically spammy things. And it integrates with Malum. It gives you a nice little chart showing you how much spam you've been getting and stuff like that.
Malum is a service, so whenever anyone posts something, let's say comments, to your site, it will check against the service and say, hey, do we know anything about people posting links to this site or this kind of a thing or using this kind of language? Do they talk about Viagra a lot in this comment and things like that? And if they do, then it can do a couple of things. It could present a CAPTCHA after the fact. So it can come back and say, you know, you look kind of like a robot to me, all your Viagra talk. Why don't you try and answer add these numbers together. Well, actually, it does the CAPTCHA twisted character kind of thing. Tell me what this is. And does that kind of stuff. And I think it also block outright. I don't know. But it's a good spam solution that's getting used on a lot of Drupal sites. It's not perfect. Certainly not perfect. There's stuff that gets through, and these days there are huge armies of people working at very low wages, getting paid, 2 cents to post spam-like comments on various websites, and it's really hard to get around those people when it's not actually automated. But Malm does a pretty good job. Number 15, 5-star module.
Yeah, 5-star module. 5-star module is basically the rating solution for Drupal. When it comes to, I want to rate this content from 1 to 5 stars, or commonly, like, you might have 10 stars or something like that. You can use anything between 1 and 5, or 1 and 10, excuse me. Despite the name being 5-star, it sounded catchier that way.
The 5-star is a rating of the module rather than the number of stars that you can use. It's
'cause yes, it is a 5-star module.
Exactly.
It's a Zagat rated module.
Yeah, exactly. 5 forks.
Yeah, the 5-star module is dependent on voting API. Voting API is actually the API that does all of the storage of the votes and the views integration and aggregating them and counting them all up and doing all that stuff. And 5-star basically is just a little layer on top of it that says a way for your users to actually enter votes. And its interface for making it so that you can enter those votes is highly robust and very configurable. Not only do you get to choose things like I want to have rateable blog posts, videos, and photos on your site, but you can also choose to do things like choose your own color stars, for example. You can go to the interface and choose, it comes with about 10 sets of stars that you can choose from, 4 of which you can choose, like, I want these stars, and then I want to custom colorize them so that they match my theme. A really, really quick and easy way of setting up ratings on your site.
Yeah.
That's all I got to say about that.
That's all you got to say about that.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, and you guys kind of co-wrote that, right?
Long ago, I did the voting API backend, and Nate ended up putting all the 5-star sexy on it, and from there on, it was pretty much Nate's game.
Sweet. Number 14, a module that... It's a little controversial in the Lullabot team. Module I wrote a while back and, called Content Template.
It's this part of the podcast.
Excuse me while I leave the room and make sounds of anguish.
Contemplate module. So, way back when. This has changed now. So there's less... I'm just going to explain it. I'm going to try and just put it out there on the table.
It was a different time.
When CCK was first written, there was no output formatters. What are they called now? Is that what they're called? Formatters?
Even if there were, there was no way to say, I want this on the teaser and I want this on the full view.
Right, exactly. Or the RSS feed. And so I wanted a way that you could create these little templates for your content, for your CCK stuff. And without having to go into the theme and do it at the theme layer, because it wasn't just a theme issue. It was also an issue of how the search engine saw things, how the RSS feed, in particular the RSS feed. I really wrote this for the RSS feed. And so I wrote this thing, and you get to create a little use PHP syntax, and you get the teaser and you get the body as a text field and the RSS feed. So these are all three text fields, and you can see all the fields on the right there, and you just click the fields on the right and they insert into the text area, and it's super easy. And I think a lot of people thought it was so easy and so wonderful that they didn't want to do the theming. They started using this as a substitute for theming. And so this is where the argument comes up, is because I think some of this stuff shouldn't necessarily be done at the theme layer. You shouldn't have to output all your CCK fields at the theme layer. You can do it in Contemplate. One of Nate's arguments is that this stuff shouldn't be saved in the database. We shouldn't be saving PHP in the database. And I took that to heart and wrote a patch for Contemplate where it now has the ability to store things in the file system, not in the files directory, but in the file system. I'm not actually maintaining the module anymore. James Glasgow has taken over the module and is doing a great job with it. It's still very popular, module. And there it is. That's what it does. I choose to use it on some of the websites I work on. Nate chooses not to use it.
Yes, don't judge me.
If you want an easy templating solution from your web browser, it's a good solution. If you want to do things right, you shouldn't use it.
You had to add the
I will say there is, again, the RSS issue. A couple of versions of Drupal ago, there was actually a bug in core that made all of the RSS feeds that core output not respect CCK's, you know, don't show this in an RSS feed setting. And until that bug was fixed in Drupal core, Contemplate really was absolutely the only game in town for controlling the output of your RSS feeds. So, you know, it's until relatively recently that was a really good use case for it.
Number 13 is a module we could all agree on.
Drush.
Drush.
Let me tell you of Drush. Drush isn't actually a module for Drupal. It's a set of command line scripts and utilities that lets you just do lots of Drupal maintenance tasks and stuff like that right from the command line. So you can go in and say Drush DL for download, and it'll download the latest version of Drupal core from Drupal.org, unzip it, and you've got it there in the directory. And if you then go inside that directory and say drush dl views cck file field image field, it will download all of those, put them in the modules direct, put them in sites all modules, unzip them, and they're there. And if you're using Drupal 7, you can type drush install core, and it will go through and install core from the command line. And then you can say drush enable those module names, and it turns on those modules. There's all kinds of stuff, and Drush also supports plugins, so you can do lots of maintenance tasks like clearing caches, turning modules on and off, running cron and stuff like that, all from the command line. Modules can expose their own functionality to Drush. It's just all kinds of cool stuff.
For example, the Migrate module that we talked about earlier has Drush integration so that you can run huge data imports that have like 300,000 users or whatever on the command line on a cron job and not invoke Drupal's overhead and cron system and batch API, God forbid, to get all that working.
Yeah, also running PHP from the command line, it doesn't time out.
Yep. And even things like generating dummy content, the devel generate module that we often show people, like, well, during development, you can say, I just need like 10 users and 200 nodes just to flesh things out for testing. You can do that from the command line now too. So you can say like, you know, drush generate 100 nodes, and bam, there it is. You know, it's just so awesome.
So the thing about Drush is it's not actually a module.
Yeah. But it ties in with Drupal.
It's listed in the modules on Drupal.org because there's really nothing else that's quite like it. It's command line stuff, which is a little, for some people, admittedly, scary. There's a lot of like screencasts out there, people showing about Drush and how to get it installed and how to get it working. It's really worth watching those screencasts and trying to sort of figure it out for yourself. It will pay off. Just the process of downloading and installing modules is so much easier using Drush.
It's really starting to get critical mass too as people start building plugins on top of
and
Drush.
And maybe someone will write a graphic user interface front end for Drush. I'm just saying.
My brain just exploded.
It could happen.
I think the GUI for Drush is called Ager.
Oh, I thought it was called Drupal.
Well, no, Ager is actually built on top of Drush. So all the site deployment stuff that it does, it's just automating Drush.
Huh. Yeah, interesting. Well, that's another thing to look into, Ager.
Yes.
You heard it here first, folks. Well, maybe you didn't hear it. first, but you heard it here, folks. Number 12. Again, we're kind of bending the rules a little bit. We've got calendar and date module, two modules on one line here. Number 12, calendar and date.
Date is a field for CCK as well as an API for handling date time zones and stuff like that. Luckily, that stuff got moved into Drupal 7, so you won't need date module just to not have to set your clock back an hour every 6 months, which is nice. And then calendar is a views plugin that allows you to display any list of content or users or whatever in a calendar. So you can, you know, build a list of who's new, or you can build a list of, you know, all of your blog entries for the past 16 months or anything that you'd like, really. They're both really awesome modules, and Karen Stevenson will be talking about them at Do It With Drupal in December.
That's true. Number 11, flag module. Nathan Haug.
Yeah, flag module. Flag is my personally favorite module. out of the ones that I maintain, flag is the most flexible solution that I've come up with, I guess. I shouldn't even say that, because I didn't even write the original module. It used to be called Views Bookmark, and it was written by Earl Miles. Similar, you know, modules that have universal purposes like panels and views and things like that. Views Bookmark fit into that same sort of category, where it was basically, I want to flag a node as something. I want to flag a node as a bookmark or a favorite, or I want to flag it as offensive. You can make up any number of flags, and then you can flag stuff as being that thing. As two options for both global flags, so something is either, like, say, promoted or not promoted site-wide, and any user can unpromote or repromote something. Or you can have per-user flags, things like a personalized list of bookmarks or wish lists, anything you want to have a user make a list of. Flag is the solution for doing that. And with the renaming of Views Bookmark to Flag, we added all kinds of abilities. Things like, now not only can you flag nodes, but you can also flag comments and users. Things like, I want to set up a flag on a user and say, I want to flag this user as a friend of mine or as a relative of mine. It can be a really lightweight friend or buddy list solution. As well as, like, on comments, you could say, flag this as offensive. And then you could say, set up some actions that make it so that after this comment has been flagged offensive 5 times, send an email to the administrator and automatically unpublish the comment. It can do all kinds of crazy things. A great generic solution for receiving feedback from your users or letting users build up any kind of customized lists.
There's actually a little bit of overlap with Flag and Voting API. I mean, with Flag maturing to the point where it has, there's some people who ask questions about, like, should I let people vote on a thing or should I use Flag? There's actually a lot of situations where I would say that Flag is a better solution than Voting API. If you want the emphasis to be on, like, who's marked it, things happen when people do particular things with it or whatever, and the, so how many people have favorited this is sort of an extra on it, but isn't necessarily the single big thing that you want to keep track of. Flag is really an amazing solution for all kinds of stuff.
Super simple. Just it's on-off kind of binary thing, and it can be per all users, so you can have it so that, like, if an administrator tags it as inappropriate or something like that, then it's tagged that way for all of them, or you can have it be per user. So, like, in that friend kind of a situation, you can say, this person is a friend of mine. And when another person comes, they can make it a friend of theirs. Flag.
Booyah.
Booyah. Number 10. Oh, we're in the top 10 now. Here we go. See, this is a new module. This is not even out there, I believe, when we did our original.
It was not a glimmer in Ryan's eye.
No, it wasn't. Uber Cart.
It's how you do e-commerce in Drupal at this point. I think the e-commerce module still exists and is being maintained, but a lot of the energy behind e-commerce, like transactions, shopping cart type stuff in Drupal, really has coalesced around Uber Cart. It's really cool, can do a lot of stuff. It's how we run all of our online stores that need product purchasing and stuff like that. There's a chapter in using Drupal about it. It's check it out. Check it out.
Get it? It's a joke. Check.
I didn't even mean it.
Oh, punny. Nice. Oh, this podcast is getting long, and we are getting punchy. Number 9 is the i18N. i18N, for those of you who are not complete geeks like us, is short for internationalization. It's even difficult to say. It gets so long. Internationalization. There are 18 letters between I and N in internationalization.
Oh, that's what that is.
So people say i18N. And it is the module to basically create multilingual websites in Drupal.
A lot of the functionality that used to be in this module in the Drupal 5 era got put into Drupal Core in Drupal 6. So there's a lot of localization and translation stuff that Drupal Core can handle. This module adds that functionality to a lot of other portions of the Drupal user interface. Things like, you know, taxonomy terms, menu items, stuff like that. It also allows you to have a little more control over things like what state the translations for given nodes are in and stuff like that. So it's sort of, you know, Drupal Core lets you do basic translation, but if you're running a heavy-duty site that has like needs like lots of localized content, you'll want to get the extra tools in the i18N module.
Am I incorrect? I mean, Drupal Core is fine if you want to create a website in another language, if you wanted to download, website.
You can load Drupal Core, you can even do things like, you know, set up, you know,
a multilingual site that is in English and French, and you can switch between them in Core?
Yes. There are certain portions of Core, like when you get beyond things like nodes, that aren't supported for translation. So like menu items and taxonomy terms. There's certain things like that.
Fills it out to really be...
Yeah, that's what i18N module does. It fills out all those sort of extra gaps that are there. Drupal Core really does focus on UI-related stuff, like, you should be able to download the Polish language pack for Drupal, and the UI gets translated, and then nodes should be able to be translated into different languages. That's what Core really kind of focuses on. This fills out the rest of the stuff.
Got it. Number 8, panels.
Oh, my.
just keep on rolling, Jeff.
So panels. Let me tell you about panels. Most Drupal modules by default only take over the middle section of the page, like the content region, and then it's up to things like blocks to allow administrators to sort of arrange little supporting information around the sides and in the sidebar regions. It's actually quite common on things like user profile pages or landing pages or the front page or something like that to need to exercise a lot more control over what appears in a page. Sometimes it's also useful to give certain types of users a lot more control over things like that. Like, I want a landing page that has a particular node at the top of the page, but then one column over here that's a view and another column over here that's, controlled by a particular node's, date, and just all kinds of crazy stuff like that, where you need to have these relatively customized systems that drive complex, like multi-pane landing pages. That's what panels is about. It lets you define those multi-pane things and populate them with different things like nodes or user information or individual fields from a node or views or individual blocks and stuff like that. And it also allows you to take over the whole, like, more sections of the page, not just the center content. So you could have a front page that like takes over the sidebars and it has a customized layout. Technically, a lot of that functionality could be delivered by having a custom theme with a lot of different regions or whatever, but panels allows you to have a lot of user interface based control of those things. So like you could have editors who can go in and say, put a new selection of things. Like I say, I want a different queue of items from node queue to be listed in the sidebar of the front page now. And you don't necessarily have to give them things like the full block administration page and stuff like that. So it's a really powerful tool. There are some ways to do it without using panels, just using code and stuff like that. But it's a very, very robust tool that a lot of people are using for those kinds of, custom landing pages and drop pages and stuff like that.
And Earl will be doing a masterclass on panels at Do It With Drupal.
Indeed he will. And one of the things that also comes with it is a module called C-Tools. You won't see that floating around too often, but you'll hear developers talking about it some.
Chaos Tools, yes.
It provides a lot of the underlying functionality for panels, like the ability to hijack the node page or the user profile page, and the ability to import and export like definitions of a panel from site to site and stuff like that. And that's also set up as Chaos Tools module, so that lots of modules can use the same kind of infrastructure to do things like taking over the node page or importing and exporting their definitions. And it's starting to become more popular for other modules to leverage it for that kind of stuff. Okay, I'm done.
Number seven is Organic Groups.
I can take this one. Organic Groups is essentially, it's another one of those content access modules. Optionally, it lets you restrict access to content on your site. How it basically works is you set up these sort of buckets that contain additional nodes, and the buckets are called groups. But you can really make any kind of node on your entire site a group. So you could make a node type called group, or a node type called department, or, you know, anything like that. And on each one of these groups, you can essentially assign people as people can subscribe to the group. They can become moderators of the group or administrators, which means that they have sort of full control of the content within their group, but not elsewhere on the site. So it's very interesting for sort of enabling collaborative workflows and things like that. Groups.drupal.org is a big showcase site for organic groups. That's where all of the local groups as well as working groups for the Drupal project are located. And sort of a nice centralized place where you can sort of stay on top of all that activity. You can do things like cross-post between groups. You can send emails and announcements to everybody in your group. So it's just a really powerful module for any kind of, you know, workflow that needs that sort of setup.
Number six.
That's about all I, oh.
Number six is WYSIWYG. WYSIWG stands for What You See Is What You Get, and we refer to it as WYSIWYG. And there's a separate. There used to be a whole bunch of different modules. There was TinyMCE, FCK editor. There were various different types of WYSIWYG editors out there, and each of them kind of had their own module. And now there's just one WYSIWYG module. Anybody want to talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, I love talking about WYSIWYG.
Good.
It's so great. It's definitely the future of rich text editing, if you will, in Drupal. WYSIWYG started out as WYSIWYG API, which is basically supposed to be the be-all, end-all of WYSIWYG editors, where it in itself is not tuned to one specific editor, so it's not specific to TinyMCE or to FCK, now CK editor, or any of those other things. Instead, it's a framework that allows all of those editors to share the same basic interface. As it's a breeze to set up, has excellent installation instructions, and it's also the only WYSIWYG that ties together the input format and the actual text area that's above it. So you can have things like you can have filtered HTML, which might just be, or like Markdown or something like that, have that be an input format. And when that's checked, there's no WYSIWYG applied. But then when you switch to full HTML, there is a nice TinyMCE editor available for you to use. But then if you switch to like PHP code, you definitely don't want to have a WYSIWYG on top of your PHP code, because it'll cause all kinds of havoc. And so it's the only solution that actually ties together those two things and makes the WYSIWYG available only when it makes sense to actually have a WYSIWYG available. In the future, I think it's highly likely that major portions of WYSIWYG API are going to get moved into core, even if we're continuously not able to put an actual WYSIWYG into core. At least we'll have a really strong API that'll make it so that the user can go out and download their own WYSIWYG, whichever one they want, drop it in, and have it work. I think it's just a great solution. If you're looking for a WYSIWYG editor, it's not the first choice that people think of, because they're usually like, I want TinyMCE, I want CK editor, I want YUI editor. But if you're using any WYSIWYG editor, install WYSIWYG module, and it should work with just about all of them.
Cool. Yes, definitely a big improvement over the old systems. good stuff. Number five is Schema module. This is kind of developer-centric.
I had to adjust the list a little bit. So this one is number five. I had to quick adjust for something else. Schema module is pretty cool, though. Basically, what Schema module lets you do is, you know, if you're a developer and you have to write your hook install and you have to, you know, as of Drupal 6, we no longer do create table statements. We describe the table in these big, gigantic, honking arrays that take forever to type. Well, stop typing them because you're wasting your time. Just use Schema module, click on the table that you want, click a button, and then it will generate the code that you need, which is really, really handy.
Yes, it's really helpful when you're building modules. Schema module. Number four, another module that's helpful for anyone doing any development in Drupal is the Devel module, which includes the wonderful and handy theme developer module, which looks good, at least. I did a lot of work on theme developer module. But Devel module, goodness, it's just like a collection of a whole bunch of stuff. There's a module called Generate module, which allows you to generate dummy users and content on your site and comments and a whole bunch of stuff like that. If you're just sort of working on, if you're building a module and you need to have a whole lot of content on the site, you can use the Devel generate stuff. There's a whole bunch of functions in Devel module, like the DSM function, which allows you to print a variable to the Drupal message area. So rather than doing like a printr or var dump kind of thing that would put in that information before the HTML of your page and ends up breaking the way that your page looks, this instead puts that stuff that you're trying to output into the Drupal message area, a place where Drupal is happy to put messages like that. What else does Devel module do? Lots of stuff.
Yeah, it gives you a nice block to clear your caches.
Yeah.
The most frequent developer task of all, I think.
Yes. It allows you to print out the query log. It keeps a log of all of the queries, the SQL queries that were used to create your page, and prints them out down at the bottom of the page, and how long they took, which is really super if you're doing a lot of performance tuning on a website. Super.
Yeah, and lets you switch quickly between users also. Makes it so you can, say, set up four users, like one for authenticated, one for admin, one for editor, and then you can easily switch between those users to see how the site looks as different users.
Yeah,
very quick and easy.
The theme developer tool is sort of like Firebug for Drupal theming. It basically wraps everything that went through a theme function or a template, wraps it in a span. So sometimes it does a little funny stuff to your HTML. But basically, there's a little pop-up panel kind of a thing, and you can roll over the elements on your page, and anything that ran through a theme function will get a box around it. And when you click on it, the panel shows all the information about which template it ran through, what variables were sent to that template, what the values of those variables were, what the other template names that you could use to create other templates that would override this, all kinds of stuff. We use Devel module a lot, and I'm venture to say most of our videos in one way or another have used the Devel module, whether it's just for creating dummy content on the site. Obviously, our theming videos use Theme Developer a lot. I know that we just finished, we're in the process of editing a video on module development and the Drupal API stuff, and that uses Devel module a lot in the process of outputting things to test them and stuff like that. Just a good module to know about. Sort of a hacker's module. It's not very well documented. There's a lot of different maintainers on it, and it's not really a module that's meant to be left turned on a website, but if you're doing module development or theme development or performance tuning on a website, handy and dandy. Number three is admin menu. Wow, that's high up. Look at that, number 3. Admin menu.
Jeff, you want to take it away?
Admin menu. It's awesome. Basically, it puts a little floating menu at the top of your page that just gives you JavaScript dropdowns for all the menu items. Now, it can be restricted to certain roles, and it will only show the user the menu items that they normally have access to. So that's not a problem. The key is, if you're building like a custom theme for your site that doesn't have like all of the navigation menus for Drupal automatically being displayed as part of the UI, turning on admin menu just for specific user roles gets you out of having to make a theme that can account for suddenly having the navigation menu just like land in the middle of a sidebar or something like that. It's a huge boost because it gives you access to all those tools no matter where you are on the site, and your UI for, you know, your theme and stuff isn't affected by that. So, big win. It's one of those sort of install it first when you're monkeying around with a theme and you'll save yourself some hassle kind of tools.
I think for a lot of new users to Drupal, stuff is talked about as menu. Oh, the menu system, and you have to insert this in the menu. And they look around looking for something that looks like the kind of menus that they're used to in their operating system.
Oh, no, we don't have those.
We don't have those. This admin menu is menus like drop-down menus like in an operating system, like you have at the top of your Macintosh menu bar or Windows Windows, stuff like that. But yeah, admin menu. I don't necessarily – I don't use it on every site I work on. Sometimes it's just sort of like, oh, can we just install admin menu on this site and just not have to worry about it? And it's easy and good. Number 2,
PathAuto. My word. You got to use PathAuto. PathAuto basically lets you set up like human readable friendly URLs for a bunch of things. Like instead of having node 1, node 2, node 3, you can say, I always want it to be, say, the name of a taxonomy term that the node is tagged with / and then the title of the node. It's really nice. You can manually do that node by node using Drupal's path module, but PathAuto lets you set up rules to do it automatically, which, needless to say, saves a lot of time if you got thousands of nodes.
Yeah, and especially if you don't give the users permission to edit those paths themselves, it will automatically create SEO-friendly paths for content. Usually it's using the title of the post.
Almost always, yes.
Yeah, usually. But you could also have it be some sort of a taxonomy term slash title so that you sort of get the categories in there as well. PathAuto. It's one of those things with each version of Drupal we say, we should get this into core.
Well, actually, in Drupal 7, the inclusion of token module in core is a huge step for PathAuto, because PathAuto relies on token to generate all of those little placeholders. And, I mean, token actually started life as an include file in PathAuto that was split out into its own module. So, although PathAuto is not yet in core, the path to it being in core is much, much cleaner now, because token is just part of the system.
Yep. And last, but certainly not least, number 1, a module that we talk about just as if everyone automatically must know what it is Views module. So let's talk about it as if people don't know what Views module is. What is Views module?
You don't know about Views? What the deuce? It lets you make lists of things and then display those lists any way you like. That's it in a nutshell. For the nerdier of those among us who might be in the room, it basically lets you build arbitrary SQL queries against different kinds of objects in the Drupal universe.
Well, it's a graphic interface for building queries.
Exactly. So you can go in and say, I want to make a list of nodes or a list of users that fit these criteria, and I want it displayed as a table with sortable headers, and I want to include these specific fields, and I want it at this URL, and if somebody adds the name of a user onto the end of that URL. I want it to be filtered down to just those users, and I want it to be AJAX sortable, and I want pagers, and those kinds of things are all part of what Views does. You can build sets of data using filters and criteria and stuff like that, and then you have this output mechanism that lets you say, and I want it on a page or in a block or, you know, in some other, presented in some other way that different plugins can handle. And then also I want it displayed like in a slideshow or a table or whatever. It's incredibly flexible. Basically, anywhere on your site you're displaying a list of things, there's a fair chance you are going to want to use Views to do it.
It's very, 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 very flexible.
Yeah, the core query builder is really just the tip of the iceberg with Views. I mean, that's what it is at its core. You know, it's getting stuff out of your database. But then the real amazing power that it has is all of its flexibility that it has when it comes to actually how do you want to display that. I want to show it in a table. I want to show it as a page. I want to show it as a block. Just a calendar, endless configuration options.
Yeah. Yeah, that's Views. Earl is writing a book about Views, so there will be an entire book about it. We have an entire video called Learning Views that covers Views. You can do a lot with it, and it's really cool. Anybody want to talk about why it's not? And with a lot of these other things, we say, oh, yeah, this path auto should be in core. I don't know if I feel like Views should be in core.
Well, yeah. We talk about everybody using it, but, like, really, only about 60% of the sites that are running Drupal currently that we have statistics on are running Views. And Views is also, like, I think, slightly larger than Drupal core. It's a lot of code. It does a lot of stuff. So you could make the argument that, you know, although it's a really, really valuable tool, for those that aren't using it, or for those that are using, like, just, you know, certain customized solutions or whatever, it is asking them to swallow a really large chunk of code and, you know, additional functionality that they don't need just so that everyone else is spared the work of an additional download.
Yeah,
does anybody disagree with me?
Well,
come on.
I think Earl would disagree with you. I think that it also allows Views to go through its own release cycles and development speed, and it can mature at a different rate than Drupal, stuff like that. So, I think also, honestly, it would just be overwhelming for most people who are just downloading Drupal. It is a huge power user tool, but it's really, at this point, it's a little bit scary to look at it first, to be honest about that.
I will say, though, it's way less scary than staring at PHP MyAdmin and a bunch of theme code.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. All right. Well, there we go. That's the list. Let's see. Yeah, I don't even know what to say.
50 modules. Huge, you heard about them here.
Huge, long podcast. And if you've stuck it out to the end, bully for you. And we just the top 40 original top 40 podcast was one of the most popular podcasts we had. It was getting to be so old, and yet there were still people referring to it. So it seemed to be the right thing to do to revisit it for podcast number 80, and we did. We did. We added 10 more and a bunch of extra stuff that got into core. And there you go. There's your long list. We will post them all in the podcast notes, and people can refer to them for the next 2.5 years. Well, thanks everybody for joining us on the podcast, and we will see you next time for podcast number 81. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.